A very good morning. On behalf of Teach 613, we welcome you to take 10 for Talmud. Psachim Mem Dalet, Psachim 44a, pagination page 87. We encountered at the very end of yesterday's daf, if you look at the facing page here, five lines up, Mem Gimel Amad Beis 43b, page 86. Amar Rabbi Avoh, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Kol Yisurim Shabbatorah, anytime that you have a prohibition in the Torah, meaning eating, Ein Heter Mitztaref Le'Isser. The permitted part does not join towards the forbidden part to give you the requisite amount. Normally when we eat something, whether it's positive or negative, the amount generally is a kezayis, the size of a certain type of olive. That's true in a positive sense. How much matzah do you have to eat on Pesach night? It's true in a negative sense. How much would the person eat and be considered in full-fledged violation that he ate a portion of the non-kosher food? What happens if there's a mixture? So what Rabbi Avoh, in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, is teaching us is that even though the mixture would, let's say, dominantly be the prohibited food, nevertheless, the amount of the prohibition is only going to be met if the person eats the amount of the prohibited food. If there's a mixture, let's say non-kosher chopped meat with rice, and the person mixes it up and eats exactly one kezayis of that mixture, they would not be in biblical violation, because part of the kezayis size that they were eating was kosher food. Now, you're not allowed to do what the person did, and the mixture is prohibited, but the permitted item does not join to meet the requirements, so to speak, of the forbidden amount. Chutz, there's an exception. Mi'isurei nazir, when it comes to the prohibition of a nazir not having wine or grape products, Sharei Omra Torah Mishras, because the Torah said that it's soaked, it's embodied with the grape product, meaning a person takes a piece of bread and soaks it in the wine, and then eats the bread with the wine. The amount of the prohibition over there is the bread together with the wine, because that became the prohibition, because the pasuk says, don't soak the wine into something and then eat that something. But normally, the prohibited item is independent of the permitted item, and if there's a mixture, we need to calculate how much wine actually is here. Again, except for the case of wine, by a nazir, where the mixture is the violation. Moving on to today's daf, we expand on this basic theme. What happens if the person is eating foods that are not entirely the prohibited food, which is common? It's a mixture. So the general rule is, Kezayis bichtei achilas pras. If the person has a food that they're eating, and they get their kezayis, and they're getting the kezayis in a ratio such that in the time period of an achilas pras, which is a certain amount of food that would be eaten, estimates are between 2 and 9 minutes, depending on the shittas, we generally go with like 4 to 5 minutes, assuming that's the amount of time. So if the normal eating of that food is going to give you a kezayis in that amount of time, and you had your kezayis, that's going to be the violation. You take a look in the middle of the page, kutach habavli, les be kezayis bechtei achilas pras, this famous kutach dip, that was milchik and chametz and spicy, so it doesn't have kezayis bechtei achilas pras of the chametz. Ibe'enei, because if you eat it straight, tekasarif V'ka'ochele batle daite tzokol adam. If you eat it too fast, so then no one eats it like that. It's not considered a food. V'mishta kashata, and if you use it as a dip, v'ochel lesle b'gazayis b'chtei achilas pras, you can't consume a kazayis of the chametz b'chtei achilas pras, and therefore it would not be this classic violation. Let's turn the page to Amud Beis, and we're introduced to another variation of mixture, the topic called tam ki'ikar. The taste itself is like the item. Rashi gives an example. A person takes grapes, soaks them in water, and then pulls out the grapes. So the water is flavored with those grapes. But there's nothing noticeable to the normal human eye of the grapes. And Rashi refers to that as tam ki'ikar. Now you have taste in the water, and that taste is an extension of the original and is considered ki'ikar, like the actual prohibition. So the Gemara wants to know, what's the source for tam ki'ikar? So one suggestion is basa b'chalav, the mixture of meat and milk. I'm about halfway, almost halfway down on the page. Amud Beis, Mem Dalet Amud Beis. Mi basa b'chalav in the beginning of a line. Lav tam ba'almahu va'asur. Really, it's only taste that's being exchanged. And nevertheless, it's prohibited. There are two ways to learn in the Rishonah, whether we're focusing on the meat part or the milk part. But the idea here is that there's an exchange of flavor, either the milk to the meat, and the milk is apparently not noticed, that's what Rashi says, or the meat to the milk. And you pull the meat out, there's nothing noticeable about the meat, but the milk retains the meat flavor, and it's forbidden. And therefore you see, tam ki ikar, that even though the taste is here and nothing more, it is like the essence of the prohibited item is here and it's prohibited. The middle of the next line, v'rabbanan mi basa b'chalav lo gamrinan. But it's not so clear that you could learn from basa b'chalav de chidushu, because basa b'chalav is a very novel thing, and it could be it only works by basa b'chalav, this stringency, and otherwise it doesn't necessarily apply. The Gemara suggests two reasons why basa b'chalav is a chiddush. One reason is hay lechudei v'hay lechudei shari, because each one on its own is permitted, and it's only when it's together that it becomes prohibited. That's one approach, that basa b'chalav is very novel, and perhaps you can't learn out of it. A second approach at the end of the line, about two lines down, de'itaru le'kula yoma, because if you would soak it the entire day, meat and milk together, it would not be a biblical violation. Remember, biblical violation by basa b'chalav is even to cook it. But if you didn't cook it, if you didn't meet that very special criteria, then it would not be the biblical violation. And again, we see, even though taste was exchanged, but it didn't make it prohibited until it was actually cooked. The Gemara then says that tam ki'ikar can be proven from a case of gi'ulei nochrim, non-kosher pots. There's the case at the end of Chumash Bamidbar, where they went into battle against Midian, and the pots that they got had to be kashered. Why would pots have to be kashered? And this really introduces the entire theme of kelim, of vessels, being milchik, fleishik, treif, etc., chametz stick. The plate, you're not eating the plate. What do you want from the plate? But we have this concept of kashering that we learn out from that booty gotten from the war of Midian, that geulei nochrim, the non-kosher pots of the non-Jews, have to be kashered before they can be used. Now, what are you worried about? If you would put your kosher stew into that pot, what would happen already? Certainly, there's no tangible anything coming out. The pot certainly had to have been cleaned before you used it for kosher food. And even after it's cleaned, there's a requirement to kosher it. What's that koshering for? Clearly, it's for tam ki'ikar, because the taste that's in the walls of the pot would come out into your kosher stew and cause a problem. Apparently, the taste alone that's coming into the food is ki'ikar, like the original. Yashikoach, have a wonderful day.